This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. This week we find ourselves in the Guildhall Yard, not far from Bank in the centre of the city, to see another one of Christopher Wren's churches, and where I meet Tony Tucker, followed by the Reverend David Parrott and Alexandra Epps from Art in the City, who knows all about the beautiful stained glass windows that grace all of the windows of this church. We've come to the Guildhall, and the yard has got various big buildings around it, and one of them is St. Lawrence Jewellery. Tell me about the name, St. Lawrence. Who was he?
St. Lawrence was the treasurer of the church in Rome, and the Romans ordered him to bring out the treasures of the church. They were going to nick the money, and St. Lawrence,
somewhat foolishly,
that's the right word, brought out the old people, the sick, the poor, and the children, and said, "Here are the treasures of the church," thus ignoring rule one with the Romans: don't play silly games, because they stripped him naked and slow roasted him on a gridiron, and his gridiron is his symbol, and you can see it on the weather vane of this particular church. It's in the shape of St. Lawrence's gridiron, painted gold and sailing on the top of the tower. It's all a rather sad tale, and there's a very dark but it's quite evocative painting in the vestibule of the martyrdom of St. Lawrence.
Oh dear,
so it's all a bit gruesome. But
now, this church, we're on the outside. The interesting thing about this church is that you could walk all the way around it. It doesn't abut anything.
You're quite right in pointing out the fact that you can walk around it, because most of the Wren churches don't have very spectacular walls or exterior, because they were hidden away in city narrow streets. They had shops and houses against them. Wren didn't have a lot of money available. He didn't waste it on the walls. He did spectacular steeples and towers. You could see them. And occasionally he did a spectacular wall where it could be seen. And on the east end of this church, you have one of his best classical exterior walls. It's got classical columns and arches and everything, and it's a very fine piece of work, because of course it was opposite the entrance to the Guildhall Yard, which has been the centre of the city and the Lord Mayor's ruling of the city for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's why you got an elegant east end. The walls are original, the tower is original, the steeple is a fibreglass post-war replica of the previous one, because this church was completely gutted by firebombs. And most people regard it as perhaps the best of the post-war restorations, because Cecil Brown, the architect, did the whole lot himself, all by one man, so it's got a consistent style.
Sure. Now, that's the exterior. Should we go inside?
Yep.
While we were talking, there was a seagull fight
going on.
I'm like, the people listening and think it's in Brighton.
Give something to conspiracy theorists if they discover your podcast in 1,000 years' time. There'll be conspiracy theories to say this wasn't conducted outside St. Lawrence Jewellery, it was in Brighton, she was nowhere near. You can tell this from the seagulls.
She's made it up. So we're going in. Apparently they have coffee here.
That's the picture.
Ah, the picture. So this is the death of St. Lawrence that you mentioned. What would you say is the overriding impression of the interior of the church?
Wren's churches are all different. Some are big basilicas with a barrel vaulted nave and two aisles. Some have one aisle, some have no aisles, flat ceilings, domes. This one is the only one that you would really describe as just a great hall. There are no real aisles. There's this little Commonwealth chapel on one side. What strikes you, I think, is the gold and cream.
Yes.
And I guess it's deliberately intended to represent the importance and power of the city. So you've got these cream ceiling and walls with gold floral decoration and gold embellishments around the entablature, and then these great chandeliers, eight magnificent great gold chandeliers hanging down from the ceiling. So I think the impression you get when you come in is this is an important church.
Yeah, I agree. And that organ, that's on the organ loft above the doors.
It's spectacular,
quite spectacular,
isn't it?
Yeah. Really beautiful. And Cecil Brown, who you've talked about, done a really fine job. In every church has the royal coat of arms. This church has a pretty prominent city coat of arms on the wall, just here as well.
Yeah, again, modern, post-war. But
yeah, but it kind of shows us what you said earlier, that this is the City Corporation
City
Church.
City Corporation Church, yeah, absolutely.
David Perrott, the current vicar in charge, is a very keen and enthusiastic supporter of the city and of the churches and the city guides, and is a very lively fellow who's always happy to tell visitors about the church, and it does have an active feel about it. It's regularly used for events. People come in a lot because it's in the centre of the city, so it is quite a lively place.
Hello, I'm David Parrott, and I'm the vicar of St Lawrence Jewry Church. This church has been on this site since at least 1180. The foundations on which we're sitting at this moment date back to then, and there is in fact a vault underneath where you can see some of the 11th century foundations. The walls within which we're sitting are dated from 1677. The 11th century church was burnt to the ground in the Great Fire of London, as was so much across the city. And Christopher Wren rebuilt many city churches, this being his finest and most expensive parish church next to the Civic Centre here in the heart of the city.
Is that finest in your view, or is that finest as they saw it at the time?
Most expensive is a provable fact. Finest is my opinion. So, and we burnt to the ground a second time in the 1940s, when the German bombers came over and burnt the city to the ground, and the walls stayed up, but everything else was, broadly speaking, destroyed. So you're sitting on 11th century foundations within 17th century walls, but looking at a 1950s recreation.
Yeah, and we have the designs to show that this is as it was.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, they were in the London Metropolitan Archives, where many of the historic documents of the City of London are kept.
Yeah.
We're called St Lawrence Jewry. Prior to the Great Fire of London in 1666, there were more than one St Lawrence, and so most of the city churches with odd names, many of the suffixes are geographical, so they tell you something about where in the city in order to distinguish which of the churches it is. In this part of the city, there was a Jewish community who came over with the Normans in 1066, and they lived nearby, and so we were the St Lawrence that was near the Jewish community known as the Jewry. Yeah. And that's why we've got this strange name.
Now, the church is right by the Guildhall itself, and it makes me think there are probably connections with the corporation. Can you tell me if there are any?
Yes, indeed. The Civic Centre itself used to have a chapel. That was destroyed by fire in the mid-1800s. And at that stage, the Guildhall didn't rebuild its own chapel and adopted St Lawrence Jewry as its, so to speak, nearby chapel. So it's always hosted large services because their chapel was quite small. But now it is the main place where the Lord Mayor of London and the Sheriffs of London and the Aldermen of the City of London come six times a year for civic services. And some of those services are services where the Lord Mayor comes in what you might call his most posh rig. That is to say, it's called coming in state, and he's led into the church in his gold and black gown, led by the sword and the mace. And we're sitting just near the front of the church, where there is the only church in the City of London that has a designated seat for the Lord Mayor and the Sheriffs. And in front of the Lord Mayor's seat, there is a tall sword stand, and just in front of that, a stand for the mace. And whenever the Lord Mayor comes in that full fig version of his clothing, he comes and sits before his sword and his mace to represent the power and authority of the City of London.
So when this happens,
What kind of pressure does that put you under?
Well, the pressure is not so great during the service, because one of the joys of working in the City of London is that one minute you may be talking to the Lord Mayor and the next minute I'm talking to Charlie outside who sweeps the yard, and God has the same opinion about both of them. So there's an equality there, which is a wonderful image as part of our ministry in the city. That said, of course, in order to minister to those who come in great long processions, you have to understand processions. And so the stress happens before the service, not during it. I mean, we are unusual in that because we're the Corporation's Church, we have within the church building both the flag of the City of London, and we also have the Corporation's crest on the wall towards the back of the church, along with its motto, Domine Dirige Nos, which means Lord, lead us. We've also got lots of livery symbols around, and that's often to do with the fact that the livery companies who have worshipped here have also supported here. An awful lot of our ministry is about serving the livery companies of the city. And so most of our city churches have links with some of the livery companies. In this case, here at St. Lawrence Jewry, we have a link with 10 different companies, 9 of which are livery companies, and one is a baby livery company known as a guild. And so I'm chaplain to the haberdashers, the girdlers, the lorreners, the chartered architects and the constructors, the actuaries and the insurers, the distillers, the tobacco pipe makers, and I've recently been appointed to the Guild of Entrepreneurs.
Well done for remembering all of those.
I can only do it in the right order.
So do they approach you? Is this specific to you as the vicar here, or would this be handed down to all vicars?
Many of those companies have long links with the church. So the Worshipful Company of Girdlers, for example, has only held their annual service here for 740 years or so. So it's not about me. It is about location, and many of those older livery companies were connected here because their trades were focused into geographical areas in the city. And so if the girdlers were working near this area, then this was the church that they would come to.
What a diverse selection as well.
Yes. So the last two that I've picked up have come to me by virtue of their knowledge of me. I picked up the Worshipful Company of Tobacco Pipe Makers and Tobacco Blenders when they discovered that I stand outside the church smoking my pipe.
I smoke a pipe. They picked up on it.
They picked up on it indeed.
Knocked on your door.
And the entrepreneurs did a sort of entrepreneurial assessment of clergy across the city and ended up deciding that I would be their chaplain.
Now, we were talking about some of the symbols around the church.
Yes.
And the images. Also, quite obvious when you walk in at the wonderful windows.
Yes.
And are any of these windows showing characters who you think are worth talking about?
Yes, well, all of the windows in the church represent different characters who have a link, but it might just be worth sort of picking up one or two. There's here, just above the Lord Mayor's seat, is Sir Thomas More, who was born just round the corner and who lectured in this church actually 30 years before he became King Henry VIII's Chancellor. And so we have a link with him by virtue of the fact that he gave some of his most influential lectures here in this church.
This church is absolutely beautiful, and I think it's very dignified, elegant glass, and it really echoes the architecture of the church. If you look up to the ceiling and the curlicues of the chandeliers, it all seems to echo the shapes and the twirls and the patterns that are in the glass. And because it's all done by one artist, Christopher Webb, it's, you know, I think we're very used to going into churches and seeing a window by one artist, a window by another, different ages. This, because it's all one artist, gives it this wonderful, unified, elegant feeling. But if you look around, you can see there's a lot of clear glass, isn't there, around the individual figures. So this is allowing a lot of light into the church as well. And I always feel that these windows look a bit like a piece of jewellery. You know, if you get a very ornamental brooch or a ring, and then you get the jewel right in the centre, because of all the decoration that's going around the figures, and then this very clear, calm approach to the use of colour. Essentially, this is the art of drawing, this artist. He was trained by Ninian Comper, who was the last of the great Gothic Revival stained glass artists and architects, and there's echoes of his style. And he trained at the Slade under the very rigorous Professor Tonks. So the drawing is very controlled. It's really very elegant and has a lot of the hallmarks. You look at the ribbons and the detailing. But these two that are at the eastern end are the most ornamental. And you've got St. Paul, as the patron saint of London, on one side, and St. Catherine on the other. And the reason that they're both here is St. Paul, obviously, as the patron saint, but St. Catherine is the patron saint of Balliol College, Oxford. And both St. Paul's Cathedral and Balliol College have been involved with a selection of vicars as part of the history of this church. So that's why they're both here. If you look lower down beneath where St. Paul is standing, can you see a very beautiful angel with his wings outstretched, holding in his hands the ruined church of St. Lawrence Jewry? And if you looked either side, can you see the dome of St. Paul's, the silhouette of St. Paul's, the fire, the searchlights of the war? So you're seeing the history of what's happening. If you go to the corresponding area beneath St. Catherine, we now have a smiling angel whose hair is all perfectly in place, wings still outstretched, holding the restored church. So it's the before and after, it's the stories of the church. Tiny, tiny details, but it's all in there. And that's what I think is so magical. So we've got Thomas More, born literally a stone's throw from this church, wearing his collar of S's in that sort of way that we see him in the Holbein portrait, and the medallions that are around him, behind the and alongside the figure, contain the titles of his most important works. And top left, Utopia. But just look at the way those little flowers are just escaping from either side. It's so delicate. Then we have windows to do with other churches that became amalgamated with this parish. St. Mary Magdalene, that was a church in Milk Street as well, I think. And this is St. Michael. There was a church, St. Michael Bassishaw. So these parishes were amalgamated with this one. This is how we tend to see St. Michael, as this sort of gladiator. You know, it's the battle in heaven. And he's raising his arm with his sword, with those wonderful wings outstretched behind him that are going, the green feathers dipped in gold. And then you've got the purple clouds, so that's the sort of evil, if you like, and then the blue, the celestial blue with the stars in it. So it's that battle in heaven that's being shown with the red dragon about to be defeated. And his hair, that slightly windswept look, but you really wouldn't think there was anything dramatic going on at all. They're very serene, the way he controls the colour and the line, and they have this wonderful sort of luminosity to them. They even look wonderful at night when they're having services in here, and you see them from outside. They look absolutely divine from the outside as well, even though it's back to front.
And then in the side chapel we have a Commonwealth window, which represents the links that this church through the city has with the worldwide church, which just as the church was being restored in the 50s, country was moving from its what you might call an empire mentality to the Commonwealth mentality. And so that those windows represent that. But there's also a beautiful window depicting Christ ascended in heaven and surrounded by flames of glory. And that window was given by New Zealand. This church has had a link with New Zealand since 1933. One of my predecessors had been a missionary in New Zealand, and in 1932/3, the New Zealand government decided they would start to celebrate the Treaty of Waitangi as their national day. So on the 6th of February 1934, New Zealand itself first celebrated Waitangi Day. Because my predecessor had been in New Zealand, we in St. Lawrence Jewry hosted the first, we believe, it was the first ever Waitangi Day service on the 6th of February 1933, a year before it was celebrated in New Zealand. Now, if that isn't a bizarre piece of city history, to be able to be a year ahead of the country,
great.
It's wonderful.
So much thought has gone into what goes into them.
Yes, they've all have their own stories within them, and the window at the end, the crucifixions, resurrections, rather wonderful as well, with the colour. All these trumpeting angels, if you look around, you see, and there's angels everywhere you look. I do walks on angels, and I think there's probably more angels in here than anywhere else.
So we don't know why that is, it just happens to be that way.
Yeah. Yes, I think they were all the specifically requested by Cecil Brown, the architect, had a very strong vision of what he wanted for this church.
Do you want to show me the other window? So we've now come into the vestibule, and there is a window to the right of the door as you come in. And tell me about this one.
This is really telling us about this church. So if you look right to the top, can you see the flames? And there's two dates, 1666 and 1940, so it's showing both times that this church was completely gutted. And it's surrounded by the green, again, the green as the sort of symbol of hope and freedom around that. The central figure is Wren himself, and it's another good historical portrait. And he's holding plans for this church and what looks like a pair of dividers or a compass. And can you see surrounding him are the CW, his initials, and then what look like little pentagons. I don't know if you can see this, and I got all excited when I saw this. I thought, oh, maybe this is some secret organisation. But when you look closely, it's actually a pattern that's made out of the compasses, the dividers, with a brush and with a pen. But he's flanked by his two master craftsmen, Sir Grinling Gibbons, the great wood and stone carver, and he's holding what looked like some of the cherubs actually from St. Paul's, and then Edward Strong, the stonemason, and he's standing on the stone pillar, and they're good portraits as well. Then you come down and you get this wonderful tapestry of all the craftsmen that would be involved in creating a church of this kind. You've got somebody lifting an angel into place. We've got stained glass artists. You've got plasterers. I mean, they're all there. And many of them are specific portraits of specific people, a tribute to them. If it wasn't for all of these people, these places would never have been able to be recreated for us to enjoy. And then if you go right below, you then have Cecil Brown, the architect responsible for the restoration, with the Reverend Frank Trimmingham, who was the vicar at the time. And can you see they're poring over designs for the church? And then one of my favourite details, this etched skyline, which is showing you all the towers and the spires and the steeples of the other city churches, just in that very subtle, almost invisible way. It's such a dream, this window. It's all in there. And, you know, these windows, they carry the identity of the city in them. Can you see the little angels at the top? We've got two working angels. One's holding a set square and another one's holding a T-bar, you know. And again, it's allowing the light to come in.
I think this is extraordinary.
It's totally extraordinary.
People walk through the door, and not only are they struck by the beauty of the place, but they're also struck by the serenity of the place, the fact that you come in and you're suddenly out of the busyness of the street, and you walk into a place which I like to think of as a sort of oasis of calm. And outside our church, we have a signpost, and it says, "Come in for toilets, coffee and peace." And people often smile about my sign because, of course, if you're a tourist, finding a toilet and a cup of coffee is fairly important. But for people who are employed in the businesses immediately around us, who live frenetic lives, to walk into a place like this and just find that moment of calm and quiet, and people will just come in and sit for a few minutes and enjoy the sense that they are in a place that is different to that which is around them.